In 2021, RTRFM launched Breaking Sound Barriers, a pilot program developed in conjunction with Carers WA, aimed to provide accessible and inclusive podcast and radio training for people with a lived experience of disability. This morning, we hear the second out of three pieces of audio created through that project. This one's by Andrew Dewberry, and he's interviewing Michael Hartnett. So, interview about transitioning your life from the world of professional and high-level sports back into a civilian life.
Hello, and welcome to the Archetype Podcast. My name is Jubes, and I'm going to be with you for the next 7 minutes or so. This podcast is a monthly show in which I talk to some of Australia's most successful para-athletes and coaches, intimately discussing their approach to their respective disciplines, whether that's physically, mentally, and emotionally, whilst having to deal with a variety of disabilities and personal lifestyles. My guest today was one of the key components of what could be considered this country's golden era of wheelchair basketball and Australian basketball as a whole. Joining me to talk more about it, Michael Hartnett.
Mikey, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So as you'd probably know with these types of interviews, the athlete usually recalls certain anecdotes and highlights during their career, but I'd really like to discuss that period of time shortly after your retirement from wheelchair basketball.
I think that's a really important question. That was actually one of the hardest periods of my life. I think I certainly see it as shedding a skin almost, that you know, you were this one thing one day and then the next day it's very binary or something else. And you know what that was? I didn't really know. I did have a bit of a identity crisis in that, you know, life has to change and how and where is it going to change? And I just wasn't really sure what I could be or what I could do.
Were there any systems or programs set up during this time where you sort of had that lack of identity?
I would say not really, no. And it was a sort of a big topic at the time with other high-profile athletes retiring. I remember reading in the news that, you know, growing up, there was a big emphasis on your sport and being on court and your high performance. You know, every second you're on court is time that your opponent isn't. That was kind of how it was framed to us. So I went to uni early for psychology. I obviously quit real quick because, you know, I felt like a wasted opportunity to be in class when I could be on court. And I think then obviously coming down the line, without that, you know, work-life balance and balancing me as a human being, not just an athlete, at the very end, I come out and I was in there, that no man's land of not having any idea, not having any vocation or any skills or training besides, you know, chasing a basketball.
You also managed to find a formal education and a job within social work. What was it about social work that you found most appealing?
I think when you are looking for your new identity, you kind of have to go back and reflect on what your life was and then really break it down to what those skills were, or what you valued. And I think what that really was teamwork. I play basketball. I love teams. And what that says into social work is that, you know, you're playing with people from different backgrounds, different ages, and you've got a common goal and you kind of chase it together. And that's where the joy is. And social work is very similar, is you're joining with people and hopefully you share a goal and you're working together through different backgrounds, different, you know, beliefs and values to hopefully achieve something positive.
And you gained those transferable skills, obviously, from your experience and the time you spent playing wheelchair basketball. When you were at university, by this time, you were obviously a mature age student, also with a physical disability. And were there any challenges or observations you had whilst at university and within the workplace?
There were a lot, like a lot more than I knew going in, and a lot more than I was aware of. And it's interesting you say about being mature age and having a physical disability, because first of all, when you join social work, mature age, disability, you're kind of with a lot younger people and they know what they're doing and you're like up and at them and you're not really sure. And, you know, then kind of people look at you like, well, how are you going to fit? How are you going to be able to do this job anyway with, you know, your disability? So, you look inwards and think, well, can I do this? You don't really know. But then you find something, you know, or someone that kind of gives you a backing. But then, and, you know, that's really good. It gets you along. But then when you get to the real world and start going into placements, then there's extra barriers, and especially it then really becomes your physical disability because, you know, there's safety concerns, there's risk in the real world of social work. Sometimes you're working with people or, you know, they're in darker periods of their life, and you have to consider, you know, that there's opportunities and there's strengths in being in having a physical disability, but there's also some real risks that you have to manage. And again, I didn't know that until quite late in the game. And it was also confronting for potential employers, for, you know, lecturers and stuff, to think, well, how's this going to work for you? So it was tough.
What do you think could have helped you become more aware of these risks before entering that environment?
It's a tricky one, because sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and you just have to walk that path. I think what I found was the people that were open to positive risk, is what I like to call it, is trying something out in a planned and structured way. It's almost being comfortable in being uncomfortable, and having, you know, contingency plans, safety plans if things go awry. I think that's what really got me through, because I didn't have any clue. And obviously, again, I wasn't trained to. I was learning on the job. So it's having those people with an open mind to not look at what you can't do, finding a way to make it work with what you've got. And again, everyone's got strengths in with whatever they've got, and it's tapping into those to really maximise them.
So then what do you think sports organisations and institutes could put in place to help athletes with a disability transitioning into their life post-career, to help them feel a bit more aware and secure of what certain risks there are that comes with opportunities?
I still think that, it's getting that work-life balance of giving people with disabilities a taste of more than just sport. And would I have known myself better in a real-world situation where it's not just in a sporting field or in a gym? I would have had more of a sense of what I'm really good at, where I'm not so good at, like what job would have fit me. Because this could have also been, social work could have also been a spectacular failure. I didn't know. And I just think that with young athletes emphasising that there's more to it than the sporting field, and this also goes into mental health. I mean, it also helps with, you know, anxiety and depression and stress and all those sort of things, to have more than just sport to go home to. Because we also have to face the fact not every athlete's going to make it to the pinnacle of their goals. So I just think, young athletes have pathways into the sport, multiple, you know, dimensions of their life, and also support at the end of their careers, wherever that may be. And hopefully then you're going to have a much more confident and, you know, ready for society person with a disability.
Yeah. And do you reckon this is something that can change in the near future?
It can change, but it's difficult in Australia, if we're to be honest. We're a sporting nation, we're a sporting culture, and we demand the best, we expect the best, and that even in disabled sport, in all sports. So there would have to be some big shifts and in expectations from, you know, sporting organisations and especially high-performance ones. And also some personal responsibility, I think, from athletes too. I mean, they have to also put themselves out there. So again, it's tricky on many levels, but it's something that it's an area that can be improved for sure.
Michael, you've given us some real informative insights into your sort of life post-basketball. I want to thank you so much for taking your time to chat with me. It's been much appreciated.
No problem. Thank you. Anytime.
And that was basketballer Michael Hartnett chatting there with Andrew Dubry, a.k.a. Jubes. And thank you to Jubes for his contribution to the Breaking Sound Barriers project. That was a project I was involved with, and would like to say thank you to RTR for all the support that they provided. That podcast is available at rtrfm.com.au/podcasts, and we'll be sharing with you the third and final piece of audio next week, same time.